Voice Study by Alex Olson, our guest today on Calvos and Damien
in the house.
Your reaction.
Whose? Mine or hers?
I don't know. I'm not hearing anything.
She's gone.
I was confused.
Oh,
I am still
she's
here.
There.
My reaction or his reaction?
Yeah, to your own piece. When you finished with this, how did you feel about it? I'm asking for a specific reason that is sort of a subtext here, and we'll get to.
It's an interesting question. I actually wrote it quite a while ago. I'd say I wrote it back in, I'd say 10 years ago, possibly.
Well, then how do you feel about it now?
I feel good about it. There's something very pleasing about hearing the voice that way. It's interesting because some of the reactions I got from people when I did it were that they felt very uncomfortable with the way that the voice sounds in it. One thing they teach you in electroacoustics is that the hardest thing to disguise is the human voice, because everyone recognizes it and we respond so easily to it. I don't know. I find it pleasing, actually, to listen to. Just to hear... It's sort of like having your voice travel through unknown worlds a little bit. But I guess I could see how people might feel uncomfortable hearing those transformations to a voice. But
had you been taught the abilities of the vocoder before you played that, or were you experimenting as you were recording it?
I was experimenting as I was recording.
Was this before or after you studied electroacoustics?
During, actually.
During, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now we get sort of to that subtext. There are flaws in this piece, and I'm talking about technical flaws, that I wondered whether they would have passed the scrutiny of some of your instructors, because I know that Ned Buhalasa is a madman, very demanding, particularly about technical issues. And, you know, there are a couple of places where the vocoder fails to make the voice transformation well, and there are a couple of other places where the intonation is a little awry. And so I'm just curious about how, you know, in retrospect, and with your experience of having been taught by Ned and Laurie Radford as well, Mark Corwin and Paul Teberge, whether you slipped this by them, whether they had a critique, or...
I'm trying to remember what my critique was. I'm sure I got one. If anything, I could see them definitely critiquing it for maybe being too musical, in a more traditional sense. Because I know if we ever tried to slip a beat in there or a melody that was longer than three notes, you know, that repeated itself, that we were in for trouble. with all due respect, I learned so much in electroacoustics. I had been taking sound courses in another department at the time, and ended up just dropping the final year of those because I knew that I wouldn't learn as much as I was in the electroacoustics courses. So. Yeah, it's funny because I guess my notion of imperfection is sort of open. I sometimes like to hear imperfections in music.
I don't disagree with that. My only question really has to do with the sort of permanence of the recording. I recall, just for example, I recall when I was a teenager first listening to classical music, I had a recording of the William Tell Overture in a live performance conducted by Arturo Toscanini. And at one point in the slow section, coming up to the fast part, the clarinet squeaks. And the permanence of that meant that I would tense every time the piece was played by no matter whom, because I was waiting for that clarinet squeak. And I had a kind of a reaction to one particular note in the vocoder. The couple times I listened to it, I was thinking, here it comes again, that one that's sort of out of range, that makes it sound awkward. You know, and so maybe it's the permanence. What do you think about that?
Well, it's an interesting question because it is something that I think about quite a lot. There's actually this essay by Brian Eno, and he's talking about how composition has changed since composers have had access to recording technology, and that if you record something, even if it doesn't sound like a composition at first, just by virtue of playing it over and over again, your ear eventually turns it into a composition. And I sort of wonder sometimes about little impromptu mistakes and things like that, and how those can sort of become part of the piece as well, and how they sort of get pressed in there the way that, you know, a pressed flower in a book sort of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting because certainly, you know, somebody like Thelonious Monk, who made a lot of mistakes at the keyboard, incorporated the mistakes into the development of what he did next. You know, just sort of finger errors, and the finger errors became source material.
Right. Yeah, it's funny because in my newer stuff, I would say that that is definitely happening, that I'm purposely keeping mistakes. In the case of this, I would say maybe that my ear wasn't developed so much of the time, so I probably didn't hear the mistakes, you know, as much. But it's sort of, I guess it's a fine balance in there.
Yeah. Let's listen to another piece that uses a kind of a simple harmonic basis and almost a non-functional harmony, and that's a piece called Out of Home. Give us a minute's worth of intro to that.
Sorry?
Give us a little intro to Out of Home.
Well, another improvisationally based piece. I guess it, there's a certain desire within it, and there was within writing it, to start somewhere, I guess melodically and performance-wise in terms of the vocal, and then just sort of destroy it or make it explode.
Okay.
Sort of stretch the boundaries of where it is to make things just sort of... actually, I mean, I guess there's a bit of an Alice Coltrane reference in there. That sort of feeling of things exploding into many different tones and frequencies and having the pitches fly all over the place. And I guess that was sort of the intention there.
In terms of references, in your biography, you talk about a lot of the people who influenced you, they include many different people. You have a list, and I'm looking for it right now, and I don't see it in front. Oh, here it is. And you talk about Brian Eno, of course, and Moondog, which I find interesting, mm-hmm. and Susie and the Banshees, which was a fantastic group. And Depeche Mode, you can hear some of that in yours. And then you talk about Alice Coltrane and Nina Simone and Pauline Oliveros. One who you leave out, and it seemed to jump out at me from the very first piece we heard, He's There and He Is Funny, from when you were with Marlowe, was Laurie Anderson. And particularly the use of the single-pitched repetitive ha, which jumps right out of her Big Science album.
Right. Yeah, she's a relatively new reference for me, and I it's funny, I don't think of her as being a reference, because I guess I bought Big Science, I bought it on vinyl maybe 5 years ago, but I hadn't really heard very much from her before that. I had heard Oh Superman, but that was it.
That's the one with the ha in it. That is emulated in the Marlowe title track.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know if that was a conscious thing back then. I think I wasn't so aware of her stuff, but it's interesting you mention her, because I sort of just eat up books about composers, and especially sort of minimalist composers, and, you know, just them talking about their work. And so recently I've been reading interviews with her and just really enjoying it. There's also a band that I'm a fan of called Spiritualized from the UK, and they do a Laurie Anderson cover. And I think that, you know, reading their liner notes and realizing that it was one of her songs also motivated me to listen to her. But yeah, I'm really not familiar with anything beyond that record, but I do really enjoy her stuff. Yeah.
Well, let's listen to Out of Home now. I sort of got off track there, but I did want to jump back and ask you about your influences, and that certainly seemed to be one of them, even though maybe it was Sub Rosa. So let's listen to Out of Home. Here it is. Our guest is Alex Olson. That was Out of Home by Alex Olson. Yes.
Oh, I was just... It's okay. is the timing... Are we okay
we're
for the timing?
Still sick.
Oh, we got plenty of time. We have...
6 minutes left? Maybe seven?
We have... we have more than that. We have plenty of time. Because we have a couple more pieces to listen to as well. We have to listen to La Flaneuse. So there's no doubt we have to listen to that. Give us an introduction to that. That's a post-minimal kind of a piece, even.
Mm-hmm.
And not only post-minimal, but really disguising the sources. You say that you have voices in there. Where are they?
Oh, did I say that I had voices in there?
You did, and I struggled to hear the voices and couldn't.
Oh, no. That was a mistake on my part. That was me putting things together.
You don't remember your own music.
No. It was me. Me sending you off notes very, very quickly in a very slapdash way. No, there's no voice in there. No.
You make us work so hard.
Although I will say that I gosh, what show was it of yours that I was listening to? It was the interview with Jerry Gerber.
Oh, yeah.
And I was really getting a kick out of the stuff he was saying because, you know, you were asking him about MIDI and people's reaction to that and sort of the politics within music of that. And I've had some funny things happen with putting my stuff online, and I was part of a music board, you know, discussion board for a while, and sent a link to my stuff, and you know, got a lot of positive reactions. And but one guy just complained that, oh, you know, nowadays music is so electronic and sequenced, and you know, oh, that electronic sound, I don't know about that. And he was talking about the Glockenspiel. And
well, he clearly hasn't been awake for 50 years if he thinks that he can't stand the electronic sound. It goes back into even pop in the 1950s. And mm-hmm. if you include Les Paul and with his overdubbed guitar, it goes back further than that.
Yeah, and I got a sort of funny pleasure out of that, because I actually love that thought that someone would get really confused by what's electronic and what's acoustic and what's live and what's sequenced. Actually, beyond, you know, sort of copying and pasting some loops, nothing is sequenced in anything I've done. Actually, La Flaneuse, the main melody that's on an analog synthesizer, is purposely played through, painstakingly through the whole thing, while very gingerly sort of adjusting things like the resonance and the filter cutoff and things like that on to give the sound sort of an evolving quality through the piece. And I like that people can't always tell what's going on in their...
And certainly we couldn't, because we couldn't find that voice, so let's listen to it. Our guest is Alex Olson. This is one of the pieces she does under her other name, Alex Ookpik, and if you're looking for her, that's spelled Ookpik. Here it is, La Flaneuse. Thank you.
I'm Alex Koch, and you're listening to Calvos and Damien in the House on the Non-Pop International Network.
That was La Flaneuse by Alex Ukpik, Alex Olsen, our guest today on Calvos and Damien
in the House,
which is part of the Non-Pop International Network. We haven't said that lately.
Are we still?
We are still. It still exists. Nonpopradio.com will bring you to a list of current and past radio programs that cover non-pop and almost exclusively non-pop all the time. Non-pop.
Almost exclusively.
Yeah, La Flaneuse, very, very evocative piece. And let's shift one more time to another thing. And this tell me about this, particularly how you put it together, because you first sent a little defective file of this. This is a theme to The Stranger. And it opened with what sounded like trombone samples, and there was 8 seconds of good file, and I listened to it, and I said, "More, give me more. I want more of that piece." And so I did have an opportunity to listen to the whole thing. And so what is this piece for, and are, in fact, those trombone samples, and how did you get that marvelous pulsing?
Wow, I'm realizing there really is this theme to compositional sort of strategy that I've taken on. But this piece is written for a play that I'm working on. It's a theater adaptation of Camus' L'Étranger, aka The Outsider, and the play is going to be called Stranger. And so this piece is really basically, we were workshopping the play back in March of this past year. And so at the time, what I was doing was writing bits of music and bringing those in to when the actors were working and just sort of testing it out on them. And then we also had a public workshop of stuff. So this piece is basically, for now, the theme of the play, which doesn't actually come in till the very, very end. They are samples. They are horn samples and, from a virtual instrument. The pulsatingness of them is due to the fact that it's being played live. And so it's got a very bizarre sort of shifting rhythm to it.
You mean the samples are being played live, not real instruments playing it?
Yeah, okay. And then on top of that is actually a ukulele. Those string sounds that you're sort of hearing, the little solo over it.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of an interesting contrast. Let's hear it before we talk too much about this one. Really kind of an intriguing little piece. This is the Stranger theme by our guest, Alex Olsen.
Thank you.
The Stranger Theme by our guest today on Calvus and Damien, Alex Olson.
Will there be more music to that, or is that the sole part of the play, that accompanies the play?
Actually, there's a couple of other pieces that I'd written for the workshops that I'm currently in the process of, you know, rewriting, and we've also sort of. Well, the term we've been using is remixed the play, which is, you know, moving the scenes around and things. So I'm writing new stuff for that. But there is another piece that I wrote for the play called Marie by the Sea, and it's sort of for, well, maybe the one and only sort of happy time in that story, which is sort of the love story of the book and the play.
This we're going to hear that right now, and just very briefly, you indicate in your notes as for flute and computer. It sounds like there's a sampled harp in there. Is that what's in there?
There is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to make sure that I didn't get confused like I got on the voices.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah.
Okay, let's listen to it real quick. This is Marie by the Sea, also for the Stranger, L'Étranger, by Alex Olson.
Thank you.
Yeah, Marie by the Sea. Alex Olson, our guest on Calvus and Damien in the house. Couple more to listen to. Let's we'll save most of those for the end. I just have one I kind of want to ask you about, and we'll play it, and then we'll ask you what you're going to do in the future. And this one is "Oh Darling."
Oh, and
it's
great.
It's an interesting one because it certainly has this sort of semi-beatbox thing that you do. If you, not quite a beatbox, it's sort of a voice symbol. But the other thing that's kind of interesting with it is that it seems to have very irregular phrases. Now, I didn't time them out or anything, but it seems to be that their shape doesn't fit kind of a traditional melodic shape, and I found it very captivating.
It's funny you say that. I think of it as being very straight ahead. To me, it's sort of got, you know... well, being a Cole Porter fan, at least lyrically, it sort of got a lot of that influence in there.
Porter was a bit of a twisted composer anyway. I mean, his harmonies particularly were unexpected. But I'm just thinking about that kind of, that melodic shape seemed so unexpected. Is that what you were going for there?
Well, it's funny, actually. This piece was written... because a friend was working on a short film, and the director had his heart set on putting "quizás, quizás," or "perhaps, perhaps," in the film. And of course, you know, with films, you never know copyright-wise how much money you're going to have to pay for something. And so, knowing that he was looking for that song and possibly a stand-in for it, I tried writing something for that. And as a songwriter, it was really neat because a lot of the times, you know, with, let's say, my Alex Ukpik stuff, it's very personal and, you know, it's, you know, writing from the heart and all that and about your own stuff. And, but as a songwriter, it's, and composer, it's really fun to write something for a real purpose, beyond your own little world. So the idea with this was to try to capture that strange, bittersweet quality that original song has, which is sort of, you know, as an old theater teacher used to say, sort of giving you something and then taking it away. It sort of turns on you a little, you know. It hands you a sort of happy feeling and then sort of pulls it back. And so that was the intention there.
Let's hear it. "Oh Darling" by Alex Olson.
Oh, darling, I must confess that I love you so, but I'm tired of the desire which you constantly inspire. Oh, darling, I must confess that I love you so, but I'm tired of the desire which you constantly inspired. Some may say there'll come a day when you may be my friend, but my dear, I know for now that it's all just pretend. So kiss me and keep me locked in this gaze. I'll have my fun, although I know that it's all just a phase. And oh, darling, I must confess that I love you so, but I'm tired of the desire that you constantly inspire. Oh, darling, I must confess that I love you so, but I'm tired of the desire that you constantly inspire.
Oh, Darling by Alex Olson. I can imagine that one's teeth could get grit at that opening. Were yours, Damien?
Is this the with the yes?
Yes.
Yes. In fact, I started to gnaw on my knuckle.
The reactions to pieces can be really intriguing. I know that I found some pieces that commanded my attention, and throughout any kind of music, I'm very kind of a reactionary kind of thing. No, that's not good enough. I want more. So what's your kind of mechanism of self-criticism? How does that work?
It depends on the piece, I guess. There's probably a bunch of processes at work. A lot of the times I'll write something and then put it away, or even forget about it for a long time, even years. And so I'll record ideas and then, you know, come back to them. And that in itself can sort of be a self-criticism process, because there's always, you know, duds in there, and you sort of sort through them in retrospect and say, you know, either you find a little gem that you forgot about or find something that you're kind of embarrassed about and just kind of throw it out. But, yeah, and then...
Do you go back to pieces that you've worked on and rework them? And how easy is that to do in a kind of a studio situation?
That was something that my old band used to do quite a bit, and it's something that I consciously avoid. And in fact, it's probably my motivation for... It's probably what's behind the fact that I'm now making stuff that I'm sort of, let's say, leaving some imperfections in, like Sad Machines still has some weird stuff in the vocal. I'm trying to think of a useful analogy for it, but, well, actually, you said it before, it would be like taking apart a stir fry sometimes after you've made it, you know, and trying to separate out the ingredients, or actually more baking might be a better analogy. I find, you know, in writing, there's two kinds of songs, at least, or, you know, pieces that emerge for me. Some sort of show up and... You know, they need work and tending, but they're sort of all there, all in one piece. And those I try not to question too much. Others, I know that there's something there that I want to work with, but to draw it out takes time. There are some pieces I'm still working on now that I've been working on for years. And it's just that, you know, I sort of feel like I'm uncovering something, as if it's like a sculpture covered with sand or something, and I'm dusting away the sand, and, you know, there's some surprises in there, and sometimes it, you know, I imagine parents feel like that with their kids sometimes, you know, you're going to become what, a banker, you know? And,
are you a banker by day?
No. No. But, so with songs, sometimes they, you know, they take a little longer to get out of the nest, and, I find it is a constant challenge to not overthink, to be working diligently and thinking through, but not constantly second-guessing or thinking too much, oh my gosh, what will so-and-so think of this or whatever, more just tending to the needs of the piece.
So who's your audience?
Your question.
Yeah, it did. Who's your audience?
Well, in starting to write on my own, you know, in previous musical incarnations, I felt like I did have an audience. I had my bandmates, and then I had other musician friends, and then fans and things. But I found myself in a unique position once I got away from all that, and that I changed cities, so I changed musical communities, and was suddenly just working totally on my own. It was actually very liberating to feel like there wasn't any particular expectation for something. And it's kind of nice. I think as a composer, it's nice to feel like you have nothing to lose, or you sort of feel like everything's open. But what was interesting too, and I guess this is telling of the new context of music, is that I started posting my songs on MySpace, not knowing if anyone would react. And as I did actually start getting reactions from people. So now I've made friends on there, some of which I've met in person, who live in Toronto, one of which has become one of my closest friends, and I actually play keyboards with her for her music now. Her name's Melissa Baraski, and the particular project I play with is called Ionsoft. And so that sort of built up an audience, and now it's sort of as if my community, or in my head, some of my listeners are my fellow musicians on there. I think there's sort of a bit of a like-minded mentality among us. But yeah, but I try not to think of how someone's going to react to something. I just try to be natural about it when I'm writing.
Well, thanks very much. It's been illuminating to hear you talk about your own stuff. Tell us where you're going, and then we'll play a couple pieces and go from there.
Well, I'm currently trying to finish up two pieces for what will be an album that I'll be releasing of my music that'll be under the name Alex Ukpik. Like I said, I jokingly call it my more pop stuff, although it's not really
pop. But it does include Sad Machines, so.
It does. Hits such as, yeah. And so there's this one particular piece that I'm working on that I'm actually very excited about, and it's called Anna Christie, and it is one of those pieces that you sort of look at and think, where did this come from? In the end, it's five different parts, almost like movements, it goes, there's no repetition in those parts, so it's part A, B, C, D, E, and they all sort of fit together. So that's been a real challenge for me. It's a different structure, so I'm just trying to finish that up. And then right now I'm just working on more for the play, as well as I've sort of been reaching into film composition. It seems maybe it's the style of my music. It just seems when people hear it, people ask if I want to write for films, and so there's a couple of short films that I've started working on, and that's very new for me, but really exciting, the idea of working from images and stories, and again writing in a way that's not just my own thoughts, that's really reacting to someone else's work. So,
of course, when we asked the question, right, where are you going, we meant physically. Since you've moved from Montreal to Toronto, we figured logically that we figured that you would be going to the Northwest Territories, specifically to Tuktoyaktuk, which is on the Bering Sea. And so that's just how we analyzed the direction. Are we anywhere close?
Well, for some reason I started... On my MySpace page, I started listing myself as being in Tundra, Ontario, or Tundra, Canada, something like that. I'd love to go to different lands, but for now, it's Toronto.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Calvos and Damien in the House.
Thank you.
And we can let everybody know that Alex Ukpik, under that name, Ookpik, look up her MySpace page, and you can listen to these pieces again, and you can also find out about the release of your album when it comes out. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, upcoming Lisa Whistlecroft on our show, we don't know when yet, and a number of other people like Brian Grunstrom, and I'm looking forward to Eleni Lilios, who's one of my favorite electroacoustic composers, and we'll be speaking with her sometime this fall. I don't know when yet. We don't know anything yet.
We know, but we can't tell you, because then you'll know and we won't.
We know.
We know.
Benghazi.
Exactly.
All right, let's go out with some Lisa Whistlecroft, and of course our thanks to our guest, Alex Olson, a.k.a. and we'll listen to Work for the Railways. I'm
Thank you.